Oh, welcome everybody. Good to see you all. I know this room is smaller, but I love this room for so many other reasons. One of the reasons I love this room is it's so much easier to get to. You just walk up some steps and you are here. There's no fighting the elevators and the stairs. And fighting is what we're really good at. You know? There is this way in which we are always going to war with something. And one of the lessons of the Course in Miracles is, I want the peace of God. It says, to say these words is nothing, but to mean these words is everything. And so it's really helpful to us to look at times and see, is what we really want the peace of God, or is what we really want for them to come back to us, to get the job, to have this cancer go away, to have something out there be different? And the whole sort of concept of metaphysics that is, at least in theory and in actuality, really different than some other sort of externalized religious thought systems is that we are not earning our way anywhere. It's not by doing anything that we get to that peace, that the peace is our natural state. So it's really a kind of non-doing that takes place, and yet so many times we are working so hard to get there. And it really is like the big cosmic joke, because the meditation that we just did is all there really is to it. I mean, this is really this is something we visualize and see, but it's really literal, that we are calling our good to us, that it's natural that it come to us, that it is not a universe of words, it's a universe of vibrations. And we are always in that state of like attracts like. So that's why when things are good, they keep getting better, and when things are bad, they keep getting worse. It's because of our attention to them. The more we pay attention to what is wrong, the more we are vibrating at that same frequency, and the more that's what we're calling to us, is more things of that same like vibration. And so when you're unhappy, the deal is get happy. And I know that sounds crazy, because it sounds like you're in such a trap, but it doesn't matter how you do it, you've just got to get happy. Because the more miserable you are, the more miserable you are going to be. And the more miserable you are thinking, if things would just change, I'd be happier, the more miserable things are on the way to you. And that's just how it is. It seems unfair. I was talking to Zan yesterday, and I said, you know, it's like, you just got to get happy about anything. Even if your whole life is in wreck and ruin, and everything is horrible, and it's just like, the next thing you know, like, there's nothing left to take but your limbs, you just got to get happy about something. I said, it's like, just going, but I love this cup. Oh, this cup makes me happy, right? It doesn't matter what it is. You've got to get that place where you start looking at that which you wish to experience. And it really is what the Course in Miracles would call the positive use of denial. That we're used to sort of in this culture, you know, we're all armchair psychotherapists talking about denial. You're in denial. You're not looking at that. You're in denial. And the Course in Miracles says that there's a positive aspect to being in denial, which doesn't have to do with not looking at something, but it has to do with not focusing on it. So the Course in Miracles says, look at the crucifixion, but do not dwell on it. Right? So you look at whatever is wrong. You look at the situation, whatever you would describe as the problem, you look at it, but you don't give it your power by becoming mesmerized by it. The Course in Miracles says positive denial is very powerful because you can and should deny that error can harm you in any way, that anything that's out really has ultimate power over you, that the ultimate power comes for whatever you call the ultimate power. And so one of the questions we have to ask ourselves in a way, I think, that's really, you know, for especially a lot of people, I think, in New Thought, is to ask yourself, is it okay for me to be happy when other people aren't? Is it okay for me to be happy when my spouse is kind of miserable? Is it okay for me to be happy when people are suffering in other countries? Right? Can I allow myself joy? Can I drive past a horrible accident on the freeway and notice it and send love to those people and still feel happy? Or do I automatically go into a place of, oh, I have to feel sad and reverent now, even though I was really joyful until I saw that? But it feels like not fair to them to go on being happy. I have to mourn their, I don't even know them. I don't even know if there's anything wrong. I have no idea what's happened. I just see an accident and I have to mourn it. Because I can't be happy while other people are having this experience. And so since we have that experience, we also sometimes use that on others. Right? We will try to make them feel bad so they'll help. A lot of work in the world is this way. It's like, I'm going to bring the horrors of this place to your attention and get you upset enough so that you'll help. But do you know that that doesn't help? Do you know that when you are giving your time and energy from that place, you're actually making the problem worse? Even if you're feeding people, even if you're clothing them, because you have now joined them in the vibration of you are a victim. Now you're resonating at the level of victim. That's why you always want to help people from a place of joy, right? Not giddiness, right? We always often think joy is the giggle. But joy is just that innate river of happiness that flows through you. So you give from a place of, the Course in Miracles says, miracles are given by those who temporarily have more to those who temporarily have less. So you look at people and you know, I've been down, might be down again. I'm not going to get down with you and roll around in the mud. I'm going to extend to you because I happen to have more today. But I'm not going to think that you're less somehow, so I have to slow down and get into that miserable place so that I can help you. Right? I make the analogy of it's like going into a hospital room and just saying to the person, I can't believe this is happening to you. It's so devastating. It's so, I don't know what to do. In fact, I'm so upset, I can hardly move. So move over. Right? Right? You know, it's a phenomenon sometimes for people in hospitals that they have to entertain the people that come to them because the people that come are so morose and sad and they're adopting that your sick demeanor. So the sick people feel like they have to entertain the person who's come to see them. Right? If you're in the hospital, you want somebody who's already in a good mood that you don't have to perform for them. Somebody who's going to help sort of, you know, lift your vibration, not through words, not through encouraging you to be different than you are, but just through radiating a place of acceptance. Just acceptance as you are. I don't expect you to be well. I don't expect you to get up. I don't expect anything of you. I'm just going to radiate the peace that I am right now. But it takes a real determination to observe our thinking non-judgmentally, but almost like a scientist would, to see what is the cause and then what's the effect. Just like a scientific study of beginning to observe, when I think this, I feel this. That's all. Without thinking there are any bad thoughts or horrible, but just to observe it. When I believe this, what does that feel like and what's the effect that has on me? Because I say here all the time, this is really key to just because something sounds pretty and spiritual doesn't mean it's true. It might be a horrible lie. To whom much is given, much is expected. Millions of people believe this and it is patently false. Patently false, but it sounds good and it manipulates people, right? It manipulates people into giving or doing. To whom much is given, they have a lot. That's all that's really true. To whom much is given, they've got a bunch of shit. Because you know as well as I do, there are lots of people who a lot is expected of them and they have nothing. There are lots of people who have a lot and give nothing. It's just, that's just true. But sometimes we hear these things, and because millions of people believe it, or because it's in a sacred book, we think it's true, and we try to make our lives fit it, and it doesn't feel good. Right? And we're struggling to make it feel good, and nothing you can do will make it feel good because it's not true for you. That's why the Course in Miracles says what's hard about this course is it asks you to question every belief that you have. So he helps us with that. This is on page 296 of the textbook, The Test of Truth. Yet the essential thing is learning that you do not know. Knowledge is power, and all power is of God. You who have tried to keep power for yourself have lost it. You still have the power, but you have interposed so much between it and your awareness of it that you cannot use it. Everything you have taught yourself has made your power more and more obscure to you. You know not what it is, nor where. Now, let's stop before we get too lost in that. Everything you have taught yourself is wrong, the Course says. What does that really mean? It means that all knowledge was already in you when you were born, so you didn't need to be taught anything. Internally, you already know everything. All infinite intelligence is within you. You don't need to teach yourself anything. When you start teaching yourself shit, you're in the nightmare. That's why he's saying everything you've taught yourself is extra. That's why in the Course in Miracles, Jesus says, you and I are the same in that we have everything the Father gave us. Where we're different is that I have nothing else. You have a lot of other shit. What you read in that magazine, what your second grade teacher said to you, what your political party says, what your nutritionist said. You have all this extra stuff. I don't have any of that, he says. I only have what the Father gave me. So that's why the Course in Miracles says that this process is not a doing, it's an undoing. It's letting go of everything that we've taught ourselves by listening to the voices of the world. I say this all the time, that wonderful little book by Don Miguel Ruiz where he talks about we are domesticated by the world, like an animal is domesticated. We are taught unnatural ways of being in order to not make waves, right? In order that we'll fit in with whatever, the family or the school or whatever. Okay. You know not what it is nor where. You have made a semblance of power and a show of strength so pitiful that it must fail you. For power is not a seeming strength, and truth is beyond semblance of any kind. Yet all that stands between you and the power of God in you is but your learning of the false and of your attempts to undo the true. Be willing, then, for all of it to be undone, and be glad that you are not bound to it forever. For you have taught yourself how to imprison the Son of God, a lesson so unthinkable that only the insane in deepest sleep could even dream it. Can God learn how not to be God? And can his Son, given all power by him, learn to be powerless? What have you taught yourself that you can possibly prefer to keep in place of what you have and what you are? Atonement teaches you how to escape forever from everything that you have taught yourself in the past by showing you only what you are now. Now, this is such fabulous, good, exciting, wonderful news. I can't say enough about it. That's why I come here every week. I can't say enough about it. Is that... Oh. I'm getting ready here. Lately, I've been, you know, we talk here lately about the work of Byron Katie, where she teaches us this process of questioning your thoughts, which she calls the work. I have been doing this so much the last 2 weeks that it's so amazing the bullshit that I believe without question and the suffering that it causes and how instantly you can get out of suffering just by questioning your thoughts. Just by questioning the things that you're thinking or believing in any given moment. Just looking to see, how do I live when I believe this? When I think this thought, how do I live my life? When I think whatever it is I'm thinking at this moment, that I need more money, or that I need someone to like me, or that I need this or that, whatever it is, that thought that I'm believing without question, how do I live when I believe this? And who would I be in this situation without the thought? I'd be free. In every single situation, I would be somebody free and at peace in the moment. It's like we were talking about this last week, and I was practicing it this week just more than ever. This thing of resist your good, which is a joke. You know that's a joke. But still, we understand the way that it works. So I noticed that, and I'm sure you have too, this is sort of a universal thing, is everything I've ever chased after runs away from me. And everything that I have tried to push away, I cannot get rid of. So what I realized is if you just stand still, you're good to go. Stop running away from and stop running towards, and just stand still. And this is the message today. I want you to breathe it in. Mind your own fucking business. That's all there is to it. It is such freedom to just be there minding your own fucking business. Of how many times we are in somebody else's business. Right? Or trying to get somebody to come into our business. Instead of just, I'm just going to be here and allow everything that comes to come and allow everything that leaves to leave, and I'll just focus on what's here. And what you notice is that everything that you need comes to you, and everything that comes to you, you need. It's an amazing experience to see that you can really afford to relax, just as we did in that meditation at the beginning, that literally, I mean, this is a shamanic way of being. This idea of calling your good to you, of not going after it and not pushing anything away. We are literally like floating in this universal soup, this what Deepak Chopra calls the quantum soup. And we are calling to us, like there are certain tribes. I'm trying to remember which story I heard. I hear so many stories about there's these women who go out into the ocean and they just call today's fish to them. That's their meal for the day. They just go out and they send out this call. It's a vibration that they send out, and the fish for the day comes to them, offers its life. You know, that's what it's here for. It gives itself. And this is a mental way of us sort of seeing how life works at its highest, at its optimal. And this is what he's telling us here, is that you've taught yourself unnatural ways of being, that you have to go out and grab what you want and get it and hoard it and keep it. And if you don't get it, somebody else will have it. And there's only so much to go around, you know. And all of these complicated concepts and beliefs that we teach ourselves. One of the things that Zan and I say to each other all the time, and I say it sometimes in my mind to people that write me, is something that Byron Katie, I heard her say in one of the CDs where she said to somebody, that is a very stressful concept you have. And if you stop and just think about that every now and then, if something when you're suffering and you stop and think, this must be a very stressful concept that I'm believing right now. Some very stressful concept. I got a prayer request this week from somebody who, how shall I say this? I wish I'd thought about this earlier. Okay. Anyhow, I'll try to be vague. This person sent me a prayer request that said, basically, please pray that this woman comes back to me and that we are, you know, brought together in our relationship again and that we will walk through life, you know, on the same Holy Spirit path and blah, 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 blah. And then they included this quote from this spiritual teacher who's someone I used to really listen to a lot. And I realized, God, listening to that person really fucked me up for years. It took me a long time to sort of realize that, like, a lot of painful concepts this person was teaching me, and I was just sort of accepting them because this person had a way of making everything sound so poetic, and because it sounded poetic and spiritual, I believed it. And this person sent a passage from this person's book in the prayer request that was one of these very painful concepts that was very beautifully written about how you know, you need other people and to be in relationship to really feel the fullness of God's love and blah, 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 and all this stuff that sounded really nice. That's totally untrue. And that then just sort of exacerbates that addiction of, I can't really feel God's love unless other people love me, because that's how I feel God's love, right? Which is completely untrue. That's not love, that's addiction. That's attachment. That's codependency. You feel the fullness of God's love anytime you open up to experiencing the fullness of God's love. It's what you are. There's nothing else. You don't need anybody else. If somebody else comes along and you feel, that's great. But that's not where it comes from. And it's the thought that it comes from that that makes you addicted to that form then. Right? So here's somebody who's just believing this painful concept. And then asking me to join them in prayer to manipulate this person against their will back into this relationship. Right? It's the prayer, my will be done. Right? For their highest good. Right? Because I want to be happy and fuck them. They'll be happy because I say they're happy. I know what's good for them. Right? You don't even know what's good for you. How are you supposed to know what's good for them? This is the good news, is knowing you don't know. This is why he says, well, on the next page, he says, those who remember always that they know nothing and who have become willing to learn everything will learn it. Now, this is beautiful. To recognize you don't know anything means that in any particular situation, then, you don't know what to pray for in terms of externalized forms. Right? You don't know whether to pray for more money. I had a teacher who used to say, don't ask God to send you money. He sent you money and you blew it, remember? So when you think you need more money, but you're not really changing in your vibration or your consciousness, it's not going to make any difference because you'll just blow it like you did the last money. It won't really help you. That what you want is an experience, a vibration of abundance and well-being, no matter what's happening, right? That's why this is so key, this thing where we keep saying, what is the purpose of the course? Who publishes the course? The Foundation for Inner Peace. That's all you need to know to remember what the purpose of the course is. Who publishes it? The Foundation for Inner Peace, not the Foundation for Lots of Money. Not the Foundation for Unending Sex, right? It's the Foundation for Inner Peace. So if you're ever wondering, what am I getting out of the course? Hopefully inner peace, or I'm off track, right? So that's why this thing of, I want the peace of God. You stop me and say, now what do I want right now? Do I want the peace of God, or do I want to be right about what I'm thinking? Do I want to be right about this current belief system, which is that things or people or situations should be otherwise? Or do I want the peace of God? And sometimes you have to get miserable enough to want the peace of God. You don't have to, but when you're clinging on to something with both hands, I used to let go with bloody stumps. That's how I would let go. Right? Because it just been ripped, shredded fingers, nothing left, and then I'd be like, I'm letting go. Right? You get to the point where you realize, I don't want to have to get miserable to let go. I don't want to have to get miserable enough to want the peace of God anymore. Right? I don't want that to be, because of course the miracle says, it's not up to you what you learn, but it's up to you whether you learn through joy or through pain. Right? So you get that place of, I just want the peace of God. Whatever's happening here, I want the peace of God. Someone's coming, I want the peace of God. Someone's leaving, I want the peace of God. I'm sick, I want the peace of God. I'm well, I want the peace of God. And then everything else will fall into its natural order. But how do you get the peace of God? By that being what you put your attention on. You vibrate at the frequency of whatever you put your attention on. So when you want the peace of God, you put your attention on that which gives you the peace of God. Whatever peaceful thought or experience you can focus on in that particular moment. So then something else arises that disturbs your peace. That might happen to you once a day or 8 million times, right? Just depends on the day, right? Some days you go along and nothing really disturbs your peace of mind. And then other days, it's just like the whole universe is conspiring against you by bringing up every single thing that pushes your buttons. And you have to keep choosing it over and over and over and over again. It's like the experience of being sane, insane, sane, insane, sane, insane, sane, insane. Do you ever have that state? Sane, insane, sane, insane, sane, insane, sane, insane. And you go, insane, and then you go. And then you go, is it true? No. And I'm back to the peaceful place. Then you have to go back and say, you know, everybody, I said that thing a while ago, and I just forget that. Because I thought that was true. I was living a nightmare, and I was describing it to y'all. And it's not true, and I make my apologies. And is there anything I can do after all the damage I've done here now? Now that I'm back to the peaceful place. Right? Don't you have that experience? Where you're just like, I was totally in the nightmare. I was totally believing it. I was telling everybody else about it. I was vomiting it all over them. They were believing it. They were talking about their nightmare that's very much like my nightmare, only slightly different. Right? And then you go, oh, that was a very stressful philosophy that we had. Very stressful philosophy. Doesn't feel good. Right? And you get to that place. I want what Abraham says is nothing is more important than that I feel good. The Course just says nothing is more important than that you know the peace of God. It's just semantics. It's just the words, right? That's all it is. We're just talking about all these thought systems that teach basically the same thing. And it just keeps coming back to, it's my responsibility to call my good to me, not to fix anyone else. And the way that I help people is by radiating at my highest and best so that no matter what I do in my interactions with them, it can be helpful. It can be helpful. That means then if I give them money, it will prosper them. If I give them clothes, it will clothe them. Right? Because I'm not in the nightmare with them. I'm in a place of actual helping. And mostly, I'm just extending. I don't care if they receive it or not. This is very key. Did you get that? I don't care if they receive it or not. When you care if they receive it, oh, you're screwed. You're screwed. You want to have an effect, right? That's another painful concept. It's a manipulation. It's a control. I want to have an effect. There's a wonderful song. I think of it quite often when I'm in my right mind. I think it might be by the Bee Gees. I think. I can't remember what it's called. But it's the, or maybe it's the Beatles. It's one of those people not from here. Not from America. It's like, I started a joke that started the whole world crying. Is it the Bee Gees? I often think that. But isn't that your experience a lot of times? I started to laugh. It started the whole world crying. Right? All that really means is that when you try to have this conscious, this is very Taoist, when you try consciously to have an effect, you don't. You've perverted and polluted the process. Right? It's when I consciously try to help people, they can't wait to get away from me. And when I just don't care, I notice how helpful I am. Right? It's like that wonderful... I'm talking about that Byron Katie book, I Need Your Love, Is It True? How to Let Go of the Need for Love, Approval, and Appreciation. There's a line in the Course in Miracles that says, only the unhealed healer wants gratitude. Only the unhealed healer wants gratitude. The real healer doesn't want any gratitude, doesn't need it, is already full, isn't looking to be filled up by anyone or anything else, right? But the unhealed healer is like, look what I did for you. After all I gave to you, I gave and gave and gave. I'm a giver. Right? There is no such thing as women who love too much. That is another horrible, painful concept. Women who love too much. On the next Donahue. Right? That's a horrible, you can't love too much, but you can make a fucking deal and get screwed in the deal. Right? You can say, I'll come into this relationship and be less and meet all your needs and not look out for my own good or be responsible for myself and give everything to you. And then when you have everything, I'll resent you. Because now I'm old and tired. And no one else wants me, and you're with a 20-year-old. I guess I loved too much. No, because if you're not loving yourself, you're making a deal. Right? It's so amazing, the things that we believe, these painful concepts. All right? Okay. So this is, you need to know this if you ever get into a place where you're upset. Anyone here ever get upset? Okay, then I'm talking to you. This is page 298 of the course. I do not know what anything, including this, means. And so I do not know how to respond to it, and I will not use my own past learning as the light to guide me now. I do not know what anything means. Now, that's just one place in the course where he has us say this. That you don't know what this means. I don't perceive my own best interests. I don't know what's good for me. This is so freeing when you really say it and have the experience of it, because then you know that you don't know what's supposed to be happening. And if you don't know what's supposed to be happening, how can you judge it or feel bad about it? It's only your evaluation of it that makes you feel bad about it. So if you don't know what, you know, it's like I always say, if you tell a dog that they have cancer, it doesn't affect them at all. They're just like, because the dog is either in pain or not. That's all the dog knows, is I'm either in pain or not. But we make up words for things, and then we build a whole belief system around it, and that belief system is where all the suffering comes in. Right? You may have an experience of pain in your body, but the suffering comes from the story you tell about the pain. Right? Someone says they're leaving you, and you feel pain around that, but the suffering comes from your belief they shouldn't. That's the suffering, is it should be otherwise. Right? Instead of just the normal pain of, it's going to be different around here without you. I'm going to miss you, and I'm going to have to go through this process. The suffering is, I don't want this to happen. Make it stop happening. I shouldn't be sick. I shouldn't be in bankruptcy court. I shouldn't, whatever it is. It's the story you tell about it. That's the suffering. So the Course in Miracles keeps bringing us back to that state of innocence, just like Byron Katie keeps bringing us back to the state of innocence. Abraham brings us back to the state of innocence. All these things keep bringing us back to this place of get real radically innocent. Real radically. Stop trying to get strong again. This is what happens is something happens, we get weak, and then we try to get strong again. All that is the ego trying to, it's been dismantled and shattered in a moment, and so it tries to build itself back up again to a point of power. When you're shattered, saying, oh, this is good. I'm shattered. Now I remember again that I have no idea what's supposed to happen or what's good for me or where I'm supposed to be or where I'm supposed to live, but I know that I can be joyful no matter what's happening if I let go of my story. Right? I can be in the peace of God if I let go of my story about what's happening right now. So that was my week. It's been great. Of just like noticing if I get into the story and then just going, oh, I don't want to go there. I know what happens when I go there. It's just like you're a scientist watching an experiment where you go, every single time you do this, this is what happens. Right? That's scientific. So you just go, oh, every time I attach to that thought, suffering happens. Every time I attach to some belief about whatever, that things should be other than what they are or that I need something. Right? There are so many things. I was listening actually to this great, I will recommend this because it was really good, about for Byron Katie. You go onto thework.org and order something. But there was one that was about, it was a live seminar of three different things that was about the body. And it was something like my body should be or something like that. And then it was three different instances of people going through these things of how their body should be. One was a long thing about a woman who was like, she'd been 400 pounds and now she was down to 250 pounds. And it was all her beliefs and concepts about her body that were bringing her pain. And the other one was a woman who was like sort of flat chested and her boyfriend, her concept was that her boyfriend preferred large breasts. And so that was the story of her suffering. So she had broken up with him because that was her story. Now, he had asked her to marry him. He was engaged to her. But her story was he prefers someone with big breasts. So she dumped him. Did you ever do that? Did you ever do that in your life, a situation, not in a in any area at all, where your concept was, I've done this with people, where I've like decided for them. You observe them, you make up a belief system, and then you decide for them, and then you tell the story how they did it. Right? Well, he really prefers people with bigger breasts. But who did he ask to marry him? Me. But still, when they walk by, he looks. Right? And you go, well, that's just a painful concept you have there that he shouldn't look. Why don't you look with him? You could be just as shocked and amazed as he is. Right? The other one was about the penis. Not being able to keep an erection. And the thought that he should be able to keep an erection. And the amazing thing is what, don't look at me like that. You're like, then what happened? Buy the CD. The wonderful thing that I think Byron Katie does, that's the same thing the Course does, and it's the same thing that Debbie Ford does in The Dark Side of the Light Chasers, is turns it around in your mind so that you see it's all you, it always has been. The turnaround is where you see it's all you. Your boyfriend is obsessed with large breasts. Turn it around, I'm obsessed with large breasts, right? Because she was the one who was obsessed with large breasts because she was always policing him looking at large breasts. She's the one who was obsessed with large breasts. You really realize always, it's always me. Now, this is the good news and the horror, right? Is that it's never going to be them. I had a friend who had been in 12-step for a long time, but she had like a really, her sponsor was somebody who'd been sober for like 20 years or something, who was really kind of like one of those gravelly voiced, you know, take no prisoners, you know, not kid gloves kind of person. And so she said every time she would call her sponsor would just hear her voice and say, well, if it isn't Her Majesty the baby, who's not doing things your way? Can you imagine? Because isn't that really it? When you're upset, the question is, oh, who's not doing things your way? Right? And then you go, you mean it's me again? Remember Terry Cole Whitaker always used to say there's a common denominator in every tragedy and upset in your life? You were there. Right? In the middle every single time. Who's there every time I'm upset? Me. Right? You mean it's me again. Even though they did all this stuff, it's me again. Yes, it's you because you're the one who's seeing it this way. Right? It's that shift in perception. It's that willingness. Let me see this differently. Sometimes I think that the misunderstanding of people who study the Course is when you're saying sort of that prayer, let me see this differently, it becomes too passive in that there's the, because of the language of the Course, it seems like you're asking this external God to change your mind for you. And that's not what's happening. There's no God out there, right? It's God within. It's God everywhere present. God is not a being that's over there that we're praying to. It's God is just this essence of divine intelligence. So you're really asking yourself and you're really taking responsibility for changing your perception by saying, I'm willing to have a different perception. If you're saying, sometimes it's like you're saying, change my perception. Go ahead, I dare you. Right? I'm going to hold on to what I think, but go ahead, change my perception. Right? When you're really understanding the prayer, what you're really saying is, I'm willing to let go of being right about this. Because being right about this is fucking killing me, right? I've suffered enough. And it's that willingness to not have to get to the place of I've suffered enough. To learn how to detach very quickly when you realize you've been attached to something. To just go, oh, I noticed I was attached to that, so I can just release it. Releasing it is not the same. We tend to think that releasing means it's going to go away. Grabbing it is what's going to make it go away. Releasing it is just allowing it to be there without putting it in a prison. You know, the Course in Miracles says jailers are in jail too. You know, you're in prison while you're imprisoning that thing of, I need this thing. There's such freedom in, I don't know if I need this thing. I have no idea what I need. I know what I like. I like chocolate. I like certain movies. I know what I like, but I don't know that I need those things. Because when you need something, look what you've done to get it. And look what you're doing to hold on to it and keep it. So many people holding on to some house. That always amazes me. People who hold on to property. I've got to have this land. Did no one see Gone with the Wind? Does no one know what holding on to a fucking house and land does to you? Hello, Scarlett. Yeah, keep the house. Right? It's like, as God is my witness, I'll never be hungry again. Right? There's so much within us that glorifies that kind of da, 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 da. You know, it just glorifies suffering for something, right? Instead of just like, who was happiest? Melanie. She didn't own shit. Right? She was just like happy. You know, she had a husband who she didn't even know if he loved her or not, and she was just like happy all the time, right? She wasn't attached. She was just like coming from that place of love. And she did get mad that one time. I'm glad you killed him, Scarlett. But everybody gets to a point like that once in a while. I'm sure even Mother Teresa had a day or two. But for the most part, she was just like, whatever is. You know, I'm just present with what is. And it's learning to be aware of when we are tormented by our own thoughts. That's the practice. It's just noticing, not like policing your thoughts and getting rid of certain thoughts, but just, as I said, in this witnessing place of, how do I feel when I think this thought? How do I live my life when I believe this, when I act this way? And who am I without it? Right? It's an amazing experience to just walk through life that way, of just sort of loving yourself enough to just guide yourself that way. To be willing to sort of guide yourself gently in a better feeling direction without any attachment to being right anymore. It doesn't matter if I'm right. I'd rather be happy than be right. In fact, I would rather be happy and dead fucking wrong than right and miserable. I'm right. You know, I was talking before about last week about that place of just having decided about everything. Like being a place in your life of like, I've made all decisions now and I don't ever have to think about anything. I know who's right and I know who's wrong and I can point it out. And if I can hear even six words of your sentence, I can put you into the category. We don't have to have the whole conversation. Have you ever been in an experience like that? Or have you ever done that yourself? Where you find yourself interrupting without listening to somebody's whole experience because you want to just pigeonhole it so you don't have to listen to everything, right? I've heard this before. I know where you're going, right? It's just shocking, the trap of the mind, you know, the trap of the mind. But just this calming down. It's an amazing experience to calm down, because when you're really calm, you can even be excited and calmed down at the same time. You can be like joyous and elated and still inside calm, because you know you're not going to get anything. It's so great to know you're not going to get anything. Oh my God, the horror of thinking you're going to get something. Well, maybe I'm going to get it. And then I'll have it. Then I'll keep it. Then I'll build a little case for it. Right? And I'll let people come over and look at it. I'll talk about it, I'll photo albums of it, right? But if you just know, you're not going to get anything. You're never going to ever get anything. There's nothing to get. It's all an illusion anyhow. Some things will come and rest for a while, maybe even for a whole lifetime, and they're never going to be fucking yours. What a relief. Such a relief. Oh, my God. I started carrying around in the mornings this big sort of notebook where I sit at coffee in the morning and I just sort of kindly, with great kindness, not like, ooh, I'm on to myself, but just observe my insanity and write down my insane thoughts. Oh my God, it's so much fun to see how crazy you are. You know? Because if you start out that way, then you can stop it right there when you just realize that you're dictating. You're like a little dictator of the universe, how people should be, how situations should be, what's, you know, I'll sit there and I'll watch, like, there are these guys who are there every morning at the Starbucks that I go to, and there's two of them in particular who seem to know everybody, and so everybody sort of comes in and goes over to their table and says hello to them, and they're all, like, just, they're one more fabulous than the last one, and I've observed this for months now, of sort of watching all of this go on, and I realized sort of this growing level of discomfort as I have pieced together and fabricated a story. Did you ever do that? Like, you're fabricating this fictional story based on flimsy circumstantial evidence, right? And now you're starting to not like people that you don't even know based on the thing you made up about them. Right, and so I just sort of have watched myself, and so what I've done is I've started writing down, like, from this real ego standpoint of what I think should be happening. This is a fabulous exercise to do, because then you see how insane you are, what a bully and a dictator you are, and then you can just let it go. It's when you don't even really realize what you're thinking that you're being right. But if you really write it down, of they should do this and they should do that, and it should be like this and it should be like that, and this is what I want to have happen, and this is what should happen, and you just go, wow, that's fucking crazy. I mean, that's really insane. And then if you turn it around, you do the turnaround of what is the exact opposite of that. I mean, just go for what you really, really want to have happen, first of all. Like, well, I should walk in and they should all feel that way about me. I should walk in and they should call me over. They should jump up and kiss me and when I walk in and say, we weren't happy till you got here. Now the day can begin. Their eyes should light up when I walk in the room. Right? So then you see how insane that is. Then you turn it around and you go, I should light up when they walk in the room. I should rush over to them. I should say the day didn't begin. And then you really, really have humbled yourself because you realize that you are absolutely not almost ever willing to do what you want the world to do. And then you think, perhaps that's the problem. I'm just completely unwilling to do what I have decided everyone else should be doing. Maybe that's where we're all stuck, right? So maybe someday, maybe someday I'll do that just so I can come back here and tell you I did it. I'll just go over and adore them and just do everything that I wish the world would do for me. Wouldn't that be a great spiritual exercise in your life? To just go give your mother what she will not give you, right? To just go give your ex-mate the thing that they held back for 20 years. Right? To just give it to them freely with no expectation whatsoever, just absolutely from a place of this is my own experience of what it is to just radiate from this place. There's nothing more freeing than that. Just no expectations. You know, years ago, I didn't even read the book, but this woman that I worked with at, because I don't even know what book it was in, but this woman who was reading this book at social services sat in the cubicle next to mine. I heard her laughing, and I went over, and it was some novel, and she's in this character. The line that this character had said was, I had no expectations, and still I was disappointed. That is just about the funniest thing you could think of, because isn't that true? Haven't you had that experience where you go, I had no expectations, and still I was disappointed. Okay, how can that be? You cannot be disappointed unless you had some expectation. I thought, though, they would at least be nice. Well, that's an expectation, right? If you just go into life and you think, they might be fucking mean as dogs to me here at this Starbucks, I have no idea, then you're never disappointed. Because you don't know. You're not expecting good. You're not expecting bad. You're just like, I am unmoved whatever they do to me. Whatever happens to me, I carry my own atmosphere with me. This is a very big teaching of Ernest Holmes. You carry your atmosphere with you. Right? Wherever you go, you take your atmosphere with you. Then you decide if you will abdicate that power in a moment. How do you abdicate it? By what you give your attention to. If you're walking in love and light and you go in somewhere and there's horror and drama going on and you give your attention to it and buy into it, you've abdicated your own power. And you've abdicated your own sense of your atmosphere and you've said, I'll join you in hell. Move over. Right? So this week, this is the practice, is to just start observing those moments when you feel good. And then just say, what am I thinking now that's contributing to this feeling? And notice when you're feeling bad and say, what am I believing that's contributing to this feeling? What is my concept of what should or shouldn't be? Where am I somehow arguing with reality? I was saying this to somebody. Someone had sent me an email talking about a relationship that ended, and she said that she had done what most of us in this room have at some point done this, where you do everything you can to get them back. Right? Whatever it is, you beg and you plead and you bargain and you go through whatever it is to just try, let's do this, come on, I'll change, we'll do whatever. And you've done all these things and it hasn't worked. And I'm like, but this is such good news that you've done this, because now you know for sure that nothing that you do is going to change this situation. So now you can finally stop arguing with reality. Right? That's that wonderful line of Byron Katie. Every time I argue with reality, I lose. It's like trying to teach the cat to bark. Right? And you look and go, I did everything. Now I can finally stop arguing with reality and get on with my life. I can stop smashing my head against the wall thinking, if I'd only said that, maybe 5 years ago if I'd done this, maybe if I'd been thinner or if I'd been heavier, if I'd been this or if I'd been that. You just stop arguing with it. Right? And you just go, oh, I'm going to be present for whatever is. I don't have to approve of it or like it, but if I can just be present with it, I'll be sane. I can say, I want the peace of God. I don't know what anything means. I don't know what's supposed to happen, but I want to feel good. And if I don't feel good, I'm telling myself something that's making me feel bad. That's all. I'm telling myself something that's making me feel bad. And, oh my God, it's so fantastic. There was a woman on Friday afternoon who was having the most mind-blowing sex I've ever heard for about 2 hours. I am not kidding. I mean, such joy and enthusiasm from 3 till 5. It woke me up from my nap at 3, and I kept thinking, it'll stop soon. I'm glad she's having a good time, but it'll end soon because for most people, sex is finite. So after about an hour, I was like, I have no idea what's going on. So I'll leave for a while, and when I get back, she'll be done. So I went and got the mail, I went to Starbucks, I did some writing, I came back, and still, unending joy and enthusiasm. I mean, she was praising whoever or whatever this was. You know, I love it, thank you. I mean, it was really, like, amazing, her appreciation of this experience. And then eventually, I guess it did, and I turned on the air conditioner and the television because it was just starting to really upset me because I had a story about it. You know? But what I thought about later was, here is somebody who's probably gonna be having some more sex pretty soon. Because she really knew how to focus on what made her feel good and appreciate it in a way that would send out a vibration to whoever or whatever was there that would say, yes, more of this, more of this, more of this. And I really thought about that in the coming days of like how sometimes we are so noisy about what we don't want and what's going wrong and what we don't appreciate. And when something good is happening, we almost feel like we're demure and we're, oh, thank you. Oh, that's so nice and blah, blah, blah. But this was somebody, yes, thank you, thank you, thank you. I love it, I love it, I love it. I've never been so curious in my whole life, okay? I was just wild with curiosity. Because I didn't hear anyone else. I don't know. But again, it just made me think about how when someone is really grateful, not grateful in that pathetic way, but when somebody's really grateful, it makes you want to give more. You know, it makes you want to. It's like if somebody says to you, oh, you're so funny, you make me laugh, you always feel funny around them. Like you always give them your best because they've acknowledged it. And the universe is just like that. It's vibrational. So when you're giving your attention to your drama and your tragedy and your horrible story of victimization, it's like that's what gets acknowledged. That's included in your vibration. That's more of what you've sent out the call for. And when it's appreciation and gratitude and looking at the thoughts that make you feel better, then that's what's coming more. And so that's why, again, it's attention. When you want the peace of God, you give your full attention to it. That's why the Course in Miracles says, to be in the kingdom is to focus your full attention on it. Right? Okay. So let's do a meditation. Let's do a prayer. With the lulling sounds of somebody's alarm. No resistance to it whatsoever. It's exactly what should be happening. All right. So go ahead and close your eyes.